This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for you to be illuminated about many facets of health and nutrition with today's Q&A with Layla. That's our weekly feature wherein we answer your questions. You're free to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. If you send your questions to us in any other fashion, you risk the fate that they may go astray and not get to us properly. That's the destination for questions, radioprogram@AOL.com. And Layla is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis solving patients' problems. And Layla also has a busy practice of her own within the Hoffman Center where she consults with patients from all over the country and all over the world, in fact, patients who have doctors where they reside but want sort of an additional nutritional perspective on whatever problem they're coping with. So how you doing, Layla?
I'm all right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So let's see. In the news this week, a story that kind of got my attention, this is an interesting one, is, you know, with the Olympics coming up, there's a lot of talk about Zika, and there's a lot of talk about disqualifications. The whole Russian team, virtually all the track and field athletes have been implicated in a massive systematic scandal where they were cheating. But what caught my eye is that because of stringent testing standards, some athletes may be forced to give up meat. Do you know why that might be?
No.
And the reason is that meat from certain countries is so tainted with anabolic steroids that athletes having these meat products may test positive for performance-enhancing drugs.
Wow.
So this actually first came up 4 years ago in 2012, particularly in relation to Chinese meat. The Chinese team was advised in 2012 not to consume domestic meat before the upcoming London Olympic Games because there's actually so much clenbuterol in the meat, almost 100 times the standard set for athletes, that they decided to suggest that these athletes go on a quasi-vegetarian diet to completely eliminate the possibility. Fast forward to 2016. We have a story from this month. An NFL player got a drug test thrown out because he ate Mexican beef. The NFL sent out a strange email warning on Tuesday to its players, warning them to be careful about contaminated meat in Mexico and China. Because this, it's a NFL football player, plays for the Texans. The Titans, I guess, actually failed a drug test after eating a tainted meat. But he was reinstated because his explanation actually was believed. Most of the time, you know, they say, well, you know, I don't know what happened. You know, I had a sports bar and maybe it had some contamination. You know, some of these guys are actually looking for an excuse, because they actually are juicing with the performance-enhancing drug, so they blame it on a vitamin or a supplement, which, by the way, some of the supplements, some of the more exotic sports supplements may contain anabolic steroids. So you got to be very careful. Yeah. You got to if you're going to take a vitamin, you got to take a certified vitamin if you're going to compete in various competitions where they are WADA-controlled, World Anti-Doping Association. But I thought it was pretty interesting. is that,
wow.
Yeah, so this problem is
it's
real.
It's terrible.
Yeah, this problem is
can't
real.
Can't even trust the food supply. Can't
no.
even trust the food supply. That's a very scary thing.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Wow.
And with, you know, globalization and NAFTA and so on, there's more and more exposure to countries where the rules aren't as stringent. They just aren't as stringent as here in the U.S.
That's
I mean,
true.
We've got enough problems here in the U.S., but, you know, some of these countries are
and
free fire
zones. And here in the U.S., they're trying to make it so that, you know, you don't have to know the source of where your meat came from, what country it came from, or whether
exactly.
it was raised here in America or anything else, which is even scarier.
Yeah, exactly. There's this new thing, and it's designed to enhance the competitiveness of, you know, international products, because people may see something that's from China, and they may, mm-hmm. in my opinion, somewhat wisely say, I'm thinking maybe I'm going to pass that by, you know?
Yeah.
So, but they want to blind us to the provenance, the national origin of some of the meat products that we consume, so that and other,
right.
other agricultural products.
I mean, even when I go shopping for seafood, I avoid anything that's coming from Southeast Asia, pretty much.
Yeah, that's a big concern.
The waters are just so dirty. They're having to use so many antibiotics. So, you know, but if we're not given this this information, what are we to do?
Exactly. And then the other concern is that there actually have been some cases where people have been abducted to work in under slave-like conditions in fisheries in some of these less well-regulated countries. So,
wow.
you know, certainly from a human rights standpoint, we may want to push back. I mean, you just see this stuff, and it's like, oh, my God, there's shrimp. It's like $4 a pound. That looks great. Okay. What is it, actually? What are you getting?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow. And Dr. Hoffman, what do you say then about Zika and, you know, moving the Olympics and so forth? What's your opinion?
Well, you know, it's kind of a dilemma because on the one hand, there are people who say we should proceed with the Olympics because Zika, in 80% of people, they don't even notice that they have it. So it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And however, in a very small set of cases, it can cause devastating problems like Guillain-Barré, which is a form of paralysis. And that
yeah.
can be a very devastating consequence of Zika. But that happens rarely. The big concern is to individuals who may be pregnant. And now we know that, okay, you don't have to be pregnant. You can just get Zika, and then you have unprotected sex with somebody who is going to get pregnant
yes.
or is pregnant. And kaboom, the baby is and that's the big concern. So,
right.
So they're handing out these condoms for the Brazil Olympics. I mean, they always make a big to-do about this. These young, healthy individuals, you know, men and women are going to get together. You know, they have beautiful bodies and they're in great health. And they're going to get together in the Olympic Village. And, you know, so every year they make a big to-do about it. They're distributing condoms. Okay, well, do you really think that something might be, a little hanky-panky might be going on? Yeah, maybe. You know, international relations. And
right.
they now have Zika-proof condoms. Well, I have news for you. Any condom is Zika-proof. It's not. You don't have to have a Zika-proof condom. A condom is a condom, and it's going to prevent the passage of any kind of microorganism, whether it's a virus, you know, the AIDS virus or the Zika virus or gonorrhea or syphilis, chlamydia, you name it. It's not going to, you know. It's going to pass through that membrane.
That's even funnier than, you know, going to the meat department in the grocery store and find, you know, that your steak is marked gluten-free.
Exactly. It's like, exactly. It's
no
like a low, it's like a low-carb butter, you know, or something like that, you know.
Low-carb butter, yes.
Yeah. Zero carbs. Yay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, well, it's a very strange, brave new world that we're entering into. And all right,
wow.
been that way for a while.
Okay.
So nothing's going to change. All right, so let's take some questions. Let's see what's
going
on.
Should we move on to questions?
Questions, yes.
Okay. We've got one. We've got an email from Aristotle.
Oh, my goodness. Now, my impression is he's been dead for a while. you know, I'd be very happy to hear from him because I really admire the stuff he's written, you know. I've always,
right.
but
popular
it's an honor to hear from you, Aristotle. It really is. I studied you in college. I mean, that was so many years ago.
I hope to listen to this podcast.
I'm glad to hear you're still around. Okay.
Yeah. Aristotle writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman, Dr. Lauren Cordain listed one thing after another about why beans are not a healthy food. Mm-hmm. The nicest comment was that they're a poor source of protein. But then he lists about seven toxins, anti-nutrients they deliver with each bite that can be partially removed by soaking.
Yeah.
What is your advice?"
Well, you know, this is actually the one of the most controversial aspects of the paleo diet, okay?
Yes.
The paleo diet, the basic principle is let's go back before agricultural times and let's see what people ate. And that may be, depending on what part of the world you're from, and maybe 5,000 years ago, maybe 10,000 years ago, maybe 15,000 years ago or more. What they are discovering, though, is that there are some wrinkles in that paleo theory, is that people many tens of thousands of years ago used to gather grains. Maybe they didn't domestically harvest them in rows like farmers do today, but they gathered grains and they pounded them into bread-like compounds, whether they used fire to make them into bread. They made them into a paste or a poi-like food. And the same thing may have happened with beans. Beans do grow in the wild, and people may have found them a useful source of nutrition. So it's hard to say, oh, we weren't meant to eat beans. Beans have healthy properties. They're a very slow release source of carbohydrates. As you know, they are low on the glycemic index, which make them ideal for people with insulin resistance. They do, however, pack a bit of a wallop of carbohydrates if you consume a lot, but it's hard to consume too many beans.
Yeah. But, you know, they also pack a wallop of fiber, which helps to counteract that.
Yes, exactly.
In terms of the net carbohydrates that are actually being absorbed. Yeah.
And I have to say that I'm currently on a diet where I eat no beans. I'm on that Whole30 diet. I'm continuing it. I'm really enjoying it. However, I don't think it's probably the biggest transgression to eat beans. Now, according to Dr. Cordain, he's done a lot of work on what are called lectins. Lectins may attack the gastrointestinal lining. They may promote leaky gut in some individuals. But it's a kind of a complex science and a controversial science, and it's hard to say that beans are inevitably problematic for a lot of people. They're a little hard to digest, for sure. For some people get gas, bloating, flatulence. And so on our FODMAPs diet, which is the diet that we give to patients with IBS, beans are a potential culprit. It's hard to say that beans per se are a bad food for humans to eat.
That's true. I mean, even given on a low-carb diet, one of the foods that when a patient or a client is ready to advance to add a little more carbohydrates, I think beans are a wiser choice than, you know, before grains.
Right.
If grains are coming back. So,
you
know, the combination of beans and grains, like your beans and rice, could be a whole lot of carbohydrate. However, the phytates, the lectins causing least leaky gut, the saponins also may be problematic. Undercooked red kidney beans may actually be somewhat poisonous to the human digestive tract. So that's something that needs to be watched. And there's even been a question about, you know, should you make your chili with beans in a crock pot in a slow cooker?
Yep.
That most beans should be soaked. And soaking can remove, at least partially, many of the lectins. I mean, even in the plant kingdom, they are evolved, they naturally selected to defend themselves, and the lectins help them to do that, to avoid predators. So,
and to resist digestion, really. I mean, one of the things that...
resist digestion.
You know, one of the oldest little stories that I've shared about beans is that from an evolutionary standpoint, many plants have evolved ways of transporting themselves, you know, like dandelions, you know, they have these little feathers so that they fly from one place to another. You know, plants, of course, can't walk. They have no form of locomotion. So some of them have little burrs they stick onto animals, and then they fall off, you know, and go somewhere else. Some float, like coconuts. Coconuts can float for thousands of miles, and then they find a place to germinate on a remote desert island. That's why, you know, how the hell did they get there? Well, that they floated. When it comes to beans, they're in attractive packages, which make animals eat them, but they have compounds in them that resist digestion. So, and essentially, they get pooped out on the other side of the mountain, and then they germinate there. So these anti-digestive trypsin inhibitors, for example, may impede the process of digestion unless the beans are properly prepared, which is hard.
Right, right. Mother Nature has really worked it out for survival of the fittest. I'm constantly fascinated by it.
Yep.
So, how do you decide if you want to include beans in your diet? It depends on how you're feeling, how you're doing, what your GI complaints may be, if you have any at all, or otherwise it would be quite fine, in my estimation. You know, different strokes for different folks.
Exactly. And just a question for you is, are beans included on the specific carbohydrate diet that we use for patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and diverticulitis and autism?
Yeah. Beans can be introduced if there is no gastrointestinal upset, such as diarrhea.
All beans or just certain beans?
No, certain beans, and chickpeas are to be avoided because chickpeas are like the bread of beans. They're very, very starchy.
So that would include hummus. That would include hummus.
Not right away. It's not in the beginning phases of the specific carbohydrate diet.
Okay.
Beans would come later on.
Okay. Thank you for that good question. What else we got?
All right. Aristotle, thank you for your email.
Right. A thoughtful question from Aristotle. And sorry about kidding around about your name, because I know it's probably the second most popular name in Greece after, whatever, Demetrius or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. We've got an email from Janice. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what are your thoughts concerning insects as a source of protein and omega-3 fatty acids?
Insects.
I tried one of the snack bars made from cricket flour, and it was quite tasty.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? 80% of the world's population is having some kind of bug as a protein, which is very interesting. Or maybe not quite 80%.
You mean inadvertently or on purpose or accidentally?
On purpose. You know?
Yes.
And so crickets, I mean, if you even think about the insects of the sea that were already consuming things, if you would consider crayfish or shrimp or something, things almost resembling insects, this isn't much of a stretch.
Right.
You know?
They are arthropods, you know, right.
They're arthropods. And crickets in particular, they are a complete source of protein, and I don't think it's far-fetched.
Right. Yeah, I once had, at a Mexican restaurant, you know, after a couple of shots of tequila, I had some.
You needed that first if you're going to introduce something like that, right?
No, right. So I had a couple of, they brought this little bowl of salted crickets to the table, and they were like toasty and crunchy, and I guess seasoned with a little jalapeno. And they were very good. I mean, it was, you know, a little gastronomic adventure. And it's part of the cuisine in some countries. Some countries eat ants. Some countries eat termites. Mm-hmm. Some countries eat, especially crickets seem to be in popular. Some eat grubs, grub worms, and things like that.
Termites,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Termites, okay.
Well, you know, anteaters like them.
Yeah.
Right? They have those long tongues, and they go right into the ant thing. Well, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's far-fetched.
I mean, they're...
And as long
fat.
As the sourcing is good, you know.
Yeah. Right. They're low-fat, you know, which is, for some people, a plus. And they are a source of protein, and they they can be cultivated, so that I guess it's an example of sort of an eco-friendly food that doesn't take up a lot of resources, like grazing cattle, something along those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that would be more sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, just like the preferred wood would be bamboo because it's sustainable. You know.
Yeah.
So, Janice, thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Sure.
Okay.
We like those kind of questions. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've got an email here. He says he's a 42-year-old male who considers himself very healthy and fit, runs 5Ks, 10Ks, does very well, has had some major digestive issues like bloating, loose, and pale stools. And anyway, what he's really concerned about, not his GI issues apparently, but he's concerned about his lipid profile.
Uh-huh.
That were, the numbers are way, way high is what he is saying, although he doesn't give us any numbers, and it doesn't seem right, and is wondering if it's attributable to his digestive problems. I will say this right off the top of the bat.
Sure.
If you're having any GI issues, such as malabsorption or anything like that, and you're not absorbing your nutrition, that's a little bit of an alarm in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And just like in a person with anorexia nervosa, your cholesterol will go through the roof in your body's effort to save itself.
So that's an interesting point. Could you reiterate that? Because that's a paradoxical thing that we see, and it really kind of goes against the diet cholesterol hypothesis in heart disease.
Exactly.
Because paradoxically, people who are in starvation mode, we sometimes see a pretty high cholesterol. You know,
exactly.
Like,
exactly. So. And we also have to realize that cholesterol is necessary. It's a necessary substance in the body. That's why the liver cranks out 80% of the cholesterol that we actually use.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's necessary, if the body is in a starvation mode, a malabsorption mode, a nutritional risk mode, so a malnutrition mode even, as in the case of eating disorder or just starvation because of your circumstances, cholesterol will go way up in an effort for the body to save itself. It's literally trying to save itself, pretty much.
So another possibility I'm thinking of is, you know, here's a guy, he's an athlete, as an athlete, he may be still in the grips of a carbo-loading paradigm, where he's drinking a lot of juice, he's eating a lot of grains, maybe using some of these sugary things that athletes use, and thereby he is messing up his digestion. He's creating a lot of gas, bloating, fermentation, and diarrhea, small intestine bacterial overgrowth possibly, and that could be also related to his problems. He doesn't say anything about his diet. He doesn't say he's tried this or tried that with diet. Okay.
Yeah. So we don't know what he's eating, but you know, if he is carbo-loading, that would also crank up definitely LDL, definitely, or at least make the particles small and dense of LDL on a high-carb diet.
And this also goes to show that exercise does not always alleviate adverse lipid profiles.
Right.
So
Yeah, and this is really a very important message. People are still believing that, oh, no, I can't eat that food. It has cholesterol, and it's going to drive up my cholesterol. It's not the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, our question after this one is kind of the opposite side of the problem, which we will illustrate.
Okay.
So, but yeah, okay. Thank you for your very informative email. All right.
Good.
We've got an email from Stanley.
Right.
Who was very concerned about his cholesterol, but then things changed and he was quite stumped by it because he's a 62-year-old male. What was happening is he was afraid that his cholesterol would increase due to all the eggs, the uncured bacon and ham he was recently eating, the more guacamole he was eating, the steak and the chicken, the crockpot stews and such. Well, what happened is he had a total cholesterol of 243 that went down to 223.
Wow.
His LDL, which used to be 131, actually dropped to 121.
Wow, good.
And he had an HDL of 86, which went up to 90.
Wow. So, hey, basically, I mean, he was covered even before because he has such a robust HDL, but he's even dramatically improved his HDL. And this is actually even more dramatic things happened to me when I went from a vegan diet where my cholesterol was sometimes in the 120s, 130s.
Mm-hmm.
With an HDL that was in the 30s, to a high fat animal protein containing diet, where my cholesterol sometimes is 210, but my HDL is like 70 or 80 now. So changed. Mm-hmm. It changed.
Yeah, yeah. Particles change and everything, which is really wonderful. So, Stanley, you did the right thing.
Yeah, good. And this is a good point at which to break because we divide our podcast into two parts. Mm-hmm. And so, Layla, give us a little bit of a preview of what we're going to be hearing in part two.
What is the better or the best type of green tea to drink?
Okay, we'll tackle that question when we return to this week's Intelligent Medicine Podcast, our weekly Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.